cup. Boom.
If you thought 4 hours a day, 1,200 minutes a week was enough, think again. He's the last remnants of the old republic. A sole bastion of fairness. He treats crackheads in the ghetto gutter the same as the rich pill poppers in the penthouse.
Wow.
The clearinghouse of hot takes break free for something special. The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller starts right now.
In the air, everywhere. We are back at it again. On a Friday, as the Fifth Hour takes no days off. Well, that's actually not true, because the Fifth Hour, as you know, is only available Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But we have the radio program. Every day of the week, we've got some kind of audio content here, a spinoff of the Ben Maller Show, because 4 hours a night are not enough. Eight days a week, joined by the gentleman from west of the 405, David Gascon.
I'm here. It's good to be here. Very exciting.
Yeah. This better not be
boring.
We don't want that at all. We want
no, we'll be. I typically do not book boring guests. I book guests that are, you know, younger than 55, and I have booked Hall of Famers. I book Pro Bowlers, like the one we have on deck right now.
Well, listen, some of us were raised properly. We were raised not west of the 405. We were raised to respect legends and elders, and we look up to those people and give them a voice. We don't just shoo them away because they're past a certain age. We respect the knowledge, the wisdom, and I want to get every old NFL coach I can get. In fact, one of my goals is to get Jerry Glanville on this podcast.
Oh, that'd be great. That'd be great.
I am efforting to track down Jerry Glanville. I don't even care if we talk about anything other than his famous quote, "The NFL, not for long." Yeah. To make calls like that. That's just that alone. And Jerry's up there. So I want to get him on. But
God, today, Jim Mora was so good last week.
Oh, I love Jim. Jim was great. I told the story. I did not realize Jim had, you know, he's 86. And, you know, Gascon, I'm very bad. I think everyone's around my age, give or take a couple of years. Even children, I think, are around my age. Like little kids. I'm like, oh, it's probably close to my age. I have no concept of age. I think everyone's around my number and all that. But I was around Jim before. Jim's always acted, even when he worked at the company, you know, when I knew him back in the day, Jim Mora was always very relatable, young vibe and all that. And then I reached out to him and I didn't realize he still got it. And good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him. Another guy that's got it is our colleague. He hosts a radio show at FSR on the weekends, has a podcast as well. And you know him from his days with the Cincinnati Bengals back in the day. TJ Hushmanzada. What a name. He led the NFL. He tied for the lead in the NFL in receptions back in 07. Played 8 years as a wideout in Cincinnati. And that was the era where the Bengals were a playoff team, but then couldn't get over the hump, the Marvin Lewis years, the first part of the Marvin Lewis era in Cincinnati. And then went off and played for Seattle and Baltimore and finished up with the Oakland Raiders, and he is now going to spend some time with us. And he actually, the show he does with LeVar Arrington and Plaxico Burress, we had Plaxico on the podcast a while back, and so they all get together. It's called Up on Game. Up on Game is the name of that. And so we welcome in TJ Hushmanzada. And TJ, the broadcasting thing, you've been doing it for a while now, and is this as easy or is it harder than you thought it would be?
I have not mastered it. Listening to guys like you and others picking up things that you guys do, because obviously you've been doing it a long time. It's not as easy as I thought it would be when I initially got into it. Obviously, reps will make you better, but I enjoy it. I'm a people person. those that know me know I like to talk. And so what better way to do it than talk about something that I'm passionate about and I care about?
Absolutely. And was this your plan when you were playing back when you were in the NFL? Did you always have an eye on doing some media stuff when you were done? Or is this something that popped up that was not in the plans?
It wasn't in the plans. What happened was while playing in Cincinnati, I had quite a few reporters tell me that I should do this when I was done playing. And so those reporters, thank you. They put it in my head. They started telling me this early in my career. I wasn't even playing much, but they always said I was a great interview. They said I spoke well, and then I would always throw this in. I'm like, and I look good, so I'm good for TV, right? it was the media members in Cincinnati that told me I should look to get into it, and so I just took their advice, and here we are.
Look at that. A career born. Right away. We love it. And now you've been out, you last played like 10 years ago, right? So you've been out of the NFL for a while now. And
I believe my last year was 2012.
Oh, 2012. All right. So it's a little less.
Damn near 10 years.
Do you get like a gold watch on your 10th anniversary from not playing in the NFL after you've retired? I don't know how that works.
We do not, but that might be a hell of an idea. I need to contact them and the NFL offices. And everybody that played over a decade should get a 10-year gold Rolex.
Yes,
they can afford That's a drop in the bucket. We need to petition to start that.
I agree. Well, listen, you're part of the former players alumni association. I'm sure there's some group that you guys are all part of, so you can set that up. Absolutely. So I remember watching you play for the Bengals back in the day, TJ. But I read you grew up. I didn't know your whole story. You grew up in Barstow, right? Is that right? And I have correct. Stopped at McDonald's at that fake train station out in Barstow a million times on my way to and from Las Vegas from LA. What was it like growing up there though? I mean, living there and you know, your youth and all that.
It was different. That McDonald's, man, funny story. I used to have a buddy that worked there and we would always go into McDonald's and he would see us and try to run to the back because he knew if he didn't load our bag up with free Big Macs and quarter pounders and extra fries and apple pies, it was going to be a problem when he got off of work. So I know we'd order one meal and we better walk out of there with like seven meals.
Yeah. I was going to say, is that like the spot, DJ, like in Barstow? Is that's where everyone's passing through there? No, that's not.
It's really, Barstow is just really nothing to do. You know, everybody knows everybody. Obviously it's extremely hot. But my grandmother grew up in Texas and she relocated to Barstow. I don't know how that came about. But yeah, it's nothing to do. So either you're going to play sports or you're going to be in the streets.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I know I passed through there and I'm like, wow, man, that's gotta be weird growing up there because there isn't really much.
I drive through there now, I literally say like, how did I live here? Like, I have no, like, yeah. When I go through there, I have no idea. But I thought it was fun. And so it just shows you, if you're not exposed to much, whatever you're exposed to, you think that's normal.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then you went to a JC, right? So we're in Cerritos, I believe. Is that right?
Correct. I didn't graduate from high school because, you know, like I say, you're in the sports, you're in the streets, and I was the latter.
You're on the streets,
and
yeah.
And so I went to Cerritos College and started to take school and sports serious. After my first year, a coach talked to me and was just like, you're going to go wherever you want to go. You need to start focusing more on school. The football is going to take care of itself. And took his advice. I think I do a good job of taking advice.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. So was that the moment you said, hey, wait a minute, I can actually, you know, go to college and make some money doing this? Was it the coach that told you, or did you have an inkling that you were pretty good at football prior to that?
Anybody that knows me sounds cocky. I think I'm the best at everything. I don't think nobody can beat me at anything. And so I've always had that confidence. And he just told me, you know, you're going to do really well. The first play, I was a running back in high school. I played 1 year, my senior year in high school. That was the only time I played football, but I was a running back. And so when I went to Cerritos College, I was actually third string at receiver. The starter broke his foot. The backup got arrested. I was a starter. And first play of the game, I bombed somebody for like 80-yard touchdown. First play of the game, the start of the season. And they were like, oh, we got something. And after that, I just started taking it serious. Not the football thing. It was always fun for me. And I think I loved it because I started playing late. That I wasn't like a lot of kids that you started playing at 6 or 7 and you get tired of it. That wasn't the case for me. It was just being proactive and making school a priority.
TJ, what was like, I mean, you think about it, playing days wise, like what was your best time playing ball? Was it in JC? Was it at the D1 level? Was it in the NFL?
Oh, that's a good question. I believe the lower levels are always the best because it's pure. It's not, at least, it's never looked at as a business. You're just having fun playing football. Obviously, you go to Oregon State, that's when you start to see, oh, man, this guy's a top recruit. They probably want him to play. And you just start to see things. But I enjoyed all of it, to be honest with you. Like, I've enjoyed my time in Cincinnati. The shit was so fun, man. I really enjoyed it there. I had never been to the Midwest in my life. The first time I got on an airplane was my recruiting trip. Out of Cerritos, I went to Rutgers. And so I enjoyed all of it, but what was the best time? For me, all of it, because it wasn't a position I should have been in or people expected me to be in, and I was in it.
Do you think guys are losing the innocence of playing the game for fun now that the fact that college has instituted the name, image, and likeness monetization for these guys?
I wouldn't say that. Because a lot of those kids that are getting those deals, those kids get their ass kissed all through Pop Warner in high school. Like I was at a practice last night, actually, and it's a team called the OG Ducks out here in California. They're probably the best 14 and under football team in the country. They're not probably. They are the best. And they just so happen to be in Southern California. I went out and talked to the kids, and all of those kids are going to go to the best high schools out here. For the most part, I would say 70% of them are going to be 4 to 5 star recruits. So they're getting their behinds kissed early, and they're building up, quote unquote, their profile and their fan base. And so these kids are going into college with close to 100,000 followers on social media. Just off of where they are in high school and people knowing who they are, because they travel all across the world. And so it changes, but the kids are getting these deals. They think they're celebrities now and they're in high school.
Yeah. But I guess because it kind of goes full circle, though. I mean, you get the accolades, you get the recognition, but I guess part of the ingredient of innocence, and you know this from where you came, is that you also develop a great sense of grit and how you get your ass kicked and then get up. Do you think that's being lost?
Man, you know what's so funny? I told they ass that last night. I told them pretty much. I wouldn't say verbatim, give or take some words. I pretty much told them that last night. And yes, that's always going to win. You're a good player, and we're just talking football. It can be any sport. Mm-hmm. People are going to kiss your ass early if you show signs of being a very good player. That's just the world we live in. They're going to cater to you. You can do no wrong. And I think that's bad for these kids, because once they face adversity, once they face that bump in the road, they've been coddled all the time because they've been good. Everybody's good when you get to a certain level. And if you don't have that grit, like you said, it's over.
What about with Joe Burrow? I mean, he obviously popped on the scene at LSU and then goes to Cincinnati and gets his knee torn up. What's it like working with him, and what kind of dude is he behind the scenes?
Number one, the way he played against the Vikings in week one was fantastic. Sacked five times. And so it wasn't like they kept him clean. He was sacked five times in his first game back from a knee injury. You know, my first impression of Joe was, like, he didn't speak to many people when he got there. Fuck, he didn't speak to me really initially. Just, hey, what's up? And so if you – I spent probably 3.5, 4 months because that was the year COVID happened. And we were – I'll never forget, we're in the gym, and he's like, all right, I'm gone. I was like, all right, take care. We're working out. He was like, yeah, I think I'm going to leave tonight or tomorrow because they're supposed to shut everything down. No flights, no nothing. You know, nobody knew what was going on. It had just started. But what I will say is the first impression is the dude is confident. He believes in him. Like T.O. say, I love me some me. Joe loves him some him. Like he loves himself and he truly believes in himself. Like you'll think he's cocky. But he just believes in himself, man. And that's part of the reason he is who he is as a player, is that self-belief and confidence that he has. And anybody that's been around him, they can attest to that. He just has a self-belief and confidence about himself that it helps him. Obviously, he's a good football player. But, yeah, it's the self-belief and confidence he has. That's the first thing that stood out to me.
If all things were even in the AFC North, would he be your top quarterback in that division right now, given the ages and experience or lack thereof of certain guys?
Oh, you know what? It's really on what are we judging quarterbacks on?
Because wins and losses?
You watch, is it wins and losses? Is it the eye test? Is it the stat you put up? Or is it just what I see? And so it's he has potential to be the best. Let me say that. Lamar, his record speaks for itself. You know, he gets a lot of backlash and this and that. But you tell me. I don't know who you guys are fans of, but I guarantee you would like Lamar to be your quarterback considering the record that he's had in his short time. That division is tough. I would take Burrow over Baker. I mean, Baker's good. Baker can play. But he has a hell of a team surrounding him. You put Burrow under center with that group of guys, offensively and defensively, he does more, in my opinion. And so Big Ben, obviously, being the older statesman in the division, has been good for so long. But if me being a wide receiver and wanting to win, I'm going with Burrow.
Yeah, TJ, what are the skills? All these guys get drafted because they typically have bazooka arms, right? Cannons for arms when they're drafted at the very top of the draft. But for me, it's always been just watching football. The guy that's accurate to me is more important than the guy that can throw the long ball. As a receiver, though, when you were playing in the NFL, what was the skill if you were drafting a quarterback? You could make the perfect quarterback. What would that quarterback have? What would be the number one skill that quarterback had? Would it be arm strength? Would it be running ability? Would it be accuracy? What would it be?
Wow. Running ability would not be at the top of my list. You want a guy that's smart. You want a guy that can throw with anticipation. If you throw with anticipation, that you're going to have accuracy because you're anticipating the guy being open. And so I want a guy that's tough. Can't be a punk, because you got to be able to stare down that rush without staring down that rush and keep your eyes downfield. And I want a guy that's a leader, that other men can look to him and follow without feeling like they're less than themselves because you're following another man. Some guys just have a natural ability to relate to everyone. And so I don't think there is a perfect quarterback, but I would start with toughness and just ability to relate to your teammates. Because if I'm drafting you high, the physical ability is there. I need the other things.
Yeah. How weird is it, TJ, when you go to an NFL locker room and there's the quarterbacks that have had their ass kissed their entire lives. A lot of those guys have blue chip players, go to big power schools in the Southeastern Conference. And then there's other guys much like yourself, right? You had to go to a junior college. You didn't graduate high school. You had to go and fight and scratch and claw and all that. Like, what's the melting pot like there? And I know you guys all bust each other's balls and all that. But that's part of being in a locker room. But how weird is the dynamic there in the NFL as opposed to like college or obviously anywhere else you played?
Oh, it's different. I mean, you as you play and you navigate through college and you start to get to the NFL, the quarterbacks are always favored. They wear a different jersey in practice. You can't touch the quarterback in practice. You can touch everybody else. We all wear the same jersey except for the quarterback. So you get a picture of the quarterback being quote unquote different early on in your career. That's just what it is. The media puts a quarterback on a pedestal because when the quarterback and the team wins, oh my God, the quarterback had a great game. He did fantastic. Oh yes. When they lose, he just doesn't have enough help. You got to surround him with guys that can help him. And so they do no wrong because the media will always make an excuse for him. Oh, the organization is not very good. The guys around him aren't very good. And then when that changes, you don't say, oh yeah, he has a great team around him. Like we're doing with Baker, he has a great team around him. What do you say? Oh yeah, the quarterback just figured it out, man. You know, he went the offseason, he worked really hard. Everything goes hand in hand. I think they get way too much credit. They take way too much blame, but quarterbacks nowadays are taught to be leaders. Quarterback nowadays playing 7-on-7. They're coming into the league more ready than ever. I've been saying this for years. 7-on-7 football has made these young quarterbacks come into the league and they're ready to play. They don't have to sit as much as they used to because they're throwing the ball so much coming up.
Yeah. Hey, TJ, I want to ask you this because one of my pet peeves is the quarterbacks that get sacked a ton. There's this perception that it's always, if a quarterback's getting sacked a ton, it's always the offensive line's fault. And I've known from watching football and being around guys that play that a lot of the sacks are not because of the quarterback or it's not because of the offensive line. A certain percentage because the quarterback made the wrong decision or didn't get rid of the ball in time. So, but just always blame the offensive line. And it's always the offensive line's fault. That's not the case. Am I correct in that, or am I talking out of my tuchus?
You're correct. I mean, you can watch the game for yourself and see. I'll give you two examples. I'll say Russell Wilson and Ben Roethlisberger. They hold the ball. But the majority of the time, it works out for them. They create big plays. And so you're not going to sing the blues and cry when you lose, so you can't always just grin when you win. Russell Wilson holds the ball. He creates a big play. Nobody on that sideline is going to say, hey, Russ, we need to get rid of that ball a little sooner. You know, the offensive line had to hold up that protection for a while. But when he gets sacked, it's, hey, Russ, you need to get rid of the ball. You're holding on to it for so long. 100% the quarterbacks hold on to that ball. And they make it harder on the offensive line. I don't mind it because you create big plays. Sacks are a good stat, but it doesn't tell the whole story of the game. If I give up a sack and the next down I can keep the ball as a quarterback for 6 or 7 seconds and create a big play, it's worth it to me.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Hey, I actually, since we have you here, TJ, I think it's perfect. We're a few weeks away from the big, as we're talking in real time here, the big showdown between the Bill Belichick-coached Patriots and the Tom Brady Buccaneers. And this is one of the great barroom debates, TJ, among football observers. Was it the coach or was it the quarterback? Who gets more credit in that relationship, Belichick or
Tom
Brady?
That's easy for me. But let me go back to the last question, though.
All right.
If you're putting instant pressure on a quarterback, that's a problem. But the guys that hold the ball, that's another thing. But now, this is very easy for me. You can give me the best game plan in the world. If I can't execute it, is it the best game plan in the world?
No chance.
No chance. It's not. Put me in a position
to succeed. If I don't succeed, like, whose fault is, like, Bill Belichick is a fantastic coach. I've never seen him put on a helmet. I've never seen him tackle anyone. I've never seen him make the play. I've never seen it. It's the player. It's Brady. And I've said this years ago. I said this years ago. It's Brady. And we saw that last year. So he had Cam Newton. It's Brady. You look at his record without Brady. You look at his playoff record without Brady. It's self-explanatory. And this is not taken away from Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick is a great coach. He's a great defensive coach. I believe had Brady not gone to the Patriots, he wouldn't be the Brady we know, because I believe being on that team, learning from Bill just about defensive football, helped him a ton. But you still got to go execute. You still got to have that and hit. Brady is smart. He understands what Bill was teaching. There's a lot of guys that wouldn't get it. That's a talent within itself, 100%. If we got to give a percent, I'm going to say 70% Brady, 30% Belichick. That's just me.
Damn.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, TJ, you played for a few different coaches. You bounced around a little bit after you left the Bengals. Was if you had a terrible coach, but you're a great player, would you be able to overcome that?
No. And
why not?
The good part of going from different teams that I did at the end of my career, you start to see who's terrible as coaches. There's a lot of terrible coaches.
What makes it terrible?
When I say that, people like, oh, I just look like this. Like, I just look like this. Like, I really understand the game of football, every position. Like, I really just look like this, and I'm just a receiver. But I understand protections like I'm a lineman. I understand protections like I'm a quarterback. I understand the game of football in its entirety, every position. But you're not overcoming horrible coaching. And don't get me wrong, Belichick is fantastic, and I've said that. But when I went to different teams, oh my God, I was astonished.
Well, TJ, like, explain, TJ. Like, what are some of, you know, obviously you don't want to name people unless you want to. Feel free to name people. But what makes someone.
I'm not going to go on like that. They still coaching. I don't want to get them in trouble.
All right. But give me an example of what would be a bad coaching for you that you saw.
I'll just give you an example. For instance.
All right.
Like, you install a play. And you install this play because you expect them to give you a certain coverage. So certain teams that I played on, we would say if they play us too high safety, that can be cover two, cover four, cover six, two man. You just know the look pre-snap. You and a quarterback on the same page. So we're going to run the route like this in these coverages. Gotcha. So you work on it in practice. They give you different looks so you're not confused. If you see single high, we're going to run it this way. Gotcha. I went to teams and I'm like, so if they give us this coverage, how do you want us to run it? Just get open. I'm like, but if the quarterback needs to throw in anticipation, he needs to know how I'm going to run it. They literally were like, just get open. And I'm like, really? No adjustments at halftime. You could see a team is doing this. Like, it was astonishing to me that they spend all this time watching film, or the film watches is watching them. And this is the game plan that they come up with. And as a player, a lot of times I said something. And you can't do that because these coaches have friends and they start telling their friends, oh man, TJ's an asshole. He thinks he knows everything. You don't want him on your team. That's what starts to happen. They start to badmouth you to your friends. And so you think you're helping the team by bringing this up, but they frown upon it because they think you think I know more than you, which they do know more than me. But certain cases, nah. And you talk to any player, they all can give you these type of stories.
Yeah, but TJ, in one sense too, I get the feeling, at least it seems like some of the most successful coaches or even the coordinators in the game. I mean, because it feels like for all intents and purposes, you're running the same plays. But it's the combinations, it's the motion, it's the shifting pre-snap that really throws these defenses off. Why are these coordinators, these coaches, inability to adjust? Are they just stubborn as fuck?
Everybody pretty much runs the same. Everybody does the same thing. what you call drive, I may call levels. What you call panther, I may call lion. For the most part. So everybody does the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is the difference. Sean Payton has this. McVay has this. Shanahan has this. Andy Reid has this. I'm sure I'm leaving some names off, but that's just off the top of my head. Is the ability to call the right play at the right time because you've really scouted this team and their tendencies and what they like to do in certain situations, down and distance, parts of the field you're on. Those are the great play callers. Everybody has the same plays. It's the ability to call the right play at the right time.
Speaking of that, for all that he has accomplished during his career, do you think Aaron Rodgers is becoming unlikable?
Nah, man. It's like, you know, when people speak the truth, why is it frowned upon? He just told everyone how he felt.
Yeah.
But because they got their ass kicked, it's a problem now, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, no, I don't. He was just being honest. Like, we all say we want our athletes and these people to be honest. And when somebody's honest,
God forbid,
and then they perform and lose the way they do, it's like, is he becoming unlikable? No, I don't think so. He'll win, and they'll win 12 or 13 games this year. Week one will probably be forgotten about unless they get smoked in the playoffs. It's just, he was honest. There's some things he didn't like. Could he have handled quite a bit of it differently? Yeah, probably so. Had they won, nobody would say anything. But it's because they got their butts handed to them. They got crushed with a new quarterback starting for the Saints that it's frowned upon. No, I don't think he's becoming unlikable. He was honest. He said what he said. And that's how he felt. And so I don't mind honesty at all.
Well, he's long in the tooth. And there's another guy that's well-liked that Ben absolutely fucking hates. And that's Kyler Murray. Like, does he have MVP potential? Or does he have those flashes where he can get hot and get streaky?
Right now, I mean, we'd have to say he has these flashes where he can get hot and get streaky. But when you look at it, it's similar to Baker. He has a team around him. I mean, you got Hopkins and A.J. Green. A.J. Green can play.
Yeah.
An animal. Straight up play. A.J. Green getting open. Oh, you also have Christian Kirk and you draft Rondale Moore. Offensive line should be better. Oh, you got Chandler Jones and J.J. Watt? Ugh. Isaiah Simmons and Buda Baker? Like, they have a team. The Cardinals have a team surrounding Kyler Murray. He just has to get the ball to the right guys. What we talked about earlier, Kingsbury has to call the right play at the right time. But he's shown us that he can get hot and streaky. He hasn't shown us that he can get to that level yet. But in the game of football, he's still very young.
Hey, TJ, I read a story this week about Josh Allen of the Bills that he barfs before games. That's his routine. And I've seen some other players that – no, this is a legitimate question. I've never been in a locker room before a game. You play in the NFL. What are some of the weirdest things guys did? I assume you played with teammates that would throw up before games. But what were some of the craziest things you remember from your playing days? Guys to get set for a game, to get ready for a game.
And this is post-Lawrence Taylor, right?
I'm going to give you one, and I'm not going to say this guy's name because I think he's coaching right now. All right. I don't know how guys throw up before the game. Like, I'm not that nervous. Like, it's a nervous anxiousness type of feeling. Not I'm throwing up. But I played with a guy. No lie, this true story. And why he would do this, I have no idea. Dude would pee on himself on the sideline. And then squirt his pants with water so you couldn't really see. He would pee on himself on the sideline and squirt himself with water, with the water bottle, so nobody could tell what he was doing. Before every game. Every game.
Yeah.
Well, TJ, I have.
Right, I ain't gonna say his name, but he's the coach right now in the National Football League.
Well, TJ, I have a guy that calls my overnight show named this guy Doc Mike from Chicago, and he's a big believer in urine therapy, which is he like drinks urine and stuff. He's into that kind of thing. But
God bless him.
Yeah. Well. So some would say maybe not, but
make sure you never take a drink from his house unless the bottle has not been opened.
No, he swears by it. He sent me a bunch of books. Like, people have written books about that. It's wild. It's wild and crazy,
dude. That's like Juan Manuel Marquez when he was fighting Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao. He was taking all these vitamins. I'm a big boxing fan, and he said he'll drink his urine because why did he want to pee out all the nutrients that he had taken? So they showed it on TV, like he would put it in a cup and drink it. No lie, they were showing.
I mean, there's actually some people I would rather not drink that and not get the benefits of that. That would be bad. But you're a boxing guy. Any celebrity boxing in your future, TJ? Any this is the new thing. This is the new Michigas here. These celebrity boxing,
man. Guys. I think I do fantastic, but I think the key words in there are
No, you got TJ. The American people need somebody to beat these Paul brothers. We need someone to go in there and slap these guys around. It seems like these fights are rigged the way these fights have been going for these guys. And somebody's got to get in there and kick their tail.
They're not fighting real boxers. As soon as they fight a real boxer, watch what happens. They're good for the sport. I love boxing, man. The audience and the eyes they're bringing is great. They're making a ton of money. That's great for them and their families. But when they fight a real boxer, it's going to be a problem. They're fighting UFC guys. Yeah. When they fight a real boxer, Nate Robinson, you fight a real boxer that's your size, they're going to be in trouble.
I hear you. Hey, TJ, we gotta wrap this bad boy up. I thank you. Anything you want to promote? Anything you got coming up that you want to yap about?
Promote? Man, promote nothing, man. Y'all promote y'all stuff, man. It was just a pleasure.
Thank you.
Nothing to promote, man. I have not one thing to promote. Nah, it was just my pleasure, you know, coming on with y'all. Enjoyed it.
Awesome. Thank you, TJ. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries. Dave, take care, brother. See you Saturday. You be there Saturday?
That's right. That's right. I'll be there. Loud and proud, dude.
Yeah. See you Saturday, man. Make sure you get in the gym.
I got you, dude. Awesome. We'll tag you on this. It'll be up on Friday morning at 6. So Friday morning.
I got you, man. Y'all take care. My pleasure. Y'all stay safe.
Yeah, for sure, man. I'll see you.
Yes, sir.